Parish was founded in 1836, and the original church, as I understand it to be, was a log cabin down by the creek. In the second floor of the rectory in the hallway is a small table where the first Mass at St. Nicholas Parish was celebrated upon. And after all of these years, today, for the very first time, people were able to park their car and to walk to Mass without walking through the mud. As you see, the base coat of the blacktop is down. They'll be finishing it up this week. But I just want to draw your attention to something very important about this. We did not have to do a specific fundraiser to put blacktop in the parking lot. Because of your generosity in the Sunday collections and the time that you give to the parish and our various fundraisers like the church picnic and the food wagon, over the last several years, the finance council, the parish council, decided that we would set just a little bit aside to be able to tackle some of these projects. I'm incredibly grateful for your generosity and your faithfulness to this parish. It is amazing every time I look out there and see the blacktop down, and we wanted to do this a year or two ago, but we pressed pause on major projects till we got through the lockdown. But what a great thing to be able to walk across the parking lot and not walk through mud. And what a great thing to see after it rains that all of our gravel hasn't washed out into the road again. So thank you very much for your faithfulness to the parish, your generosity to the parish, and all of the work that you do to keep this parish what it is. I was reading the first reading a couple of days ago, and it reminded me of a story of an alternative version of the scriptures where God is speaking to Adam and there was no suitable partner, so putting him into a deep sleep and removing the rib and then forming the woman and waking Adam up and him looking at the woman and saying, gave up a rib. What could I get for an arm? It's a joke. If you're offended, you're too sensitive. I was reading the gospel, and I thought about preaching on this. And Jesus has some pretty strong words about divorce. And in the past, I've always been really anxious about preaching on this gospel because Jesus is pretty clear about what he says. But then I thought to myself, I'm really glad it's not a controversial subject like COVID that I had to preach on this weekend. I'd like to take a step back and look at this sort of in a larger framework about what Jesus says. What would it be like if we worked in a way to prevent the possibility of widespread divorce in our culture? What would that look like? When I was in seminary in the class on the sacrament of marriage, one of the projects that we were given, one of the assignments, was to interview a couple involved in marriage preparation. And I set up an interview with this couple, and I called them on the phone, and we spoke for maybe about 45 or 60 minutes, somewhere in there. And one of the things that the wife said in the interview was she said, you know, before I was Catholic, I was married previously. She said, as a non-Catholic, and my spouse, my former spouse being non-Catholic, all that we had to do was find a church, schedule the date, meet with the pastor to go through the details of the wedding ceremony, and get married. She said the whole thing happened within about a month or two. She said, unfortunately, within a few months of marriage, great difficulties began to surface, and they divorced. She said, years later, after having gone through the annulment and becoming Catholic, she was beginning the process of engagement with a Catholic spouse. And she didn't know there was such a thing called marriage preparation. And so she and her fiancé began marriage prep. It was a new experience for her that there was some sort of a requirement that was beyond just calling the church and scheduling the wedding day. She said as she and her fiancé went through that process, she realized that if she would have had it the first time, she never would have been married. And she was so grateful for what the church provided for her that she and her new husband quickly became involved in marriage prep in their parish community. And they dedicated time helping engaged couples to prepare for marriage. She wanted me as a seminarian to understand that when the day came that I was a priest and a pastor of a parish, to not underestimate the importance of marriage prep. Several years ago, we formed a study group in this parish to look at marriage prep. And I brought this group together and I asked them to really think outside of the box. What can we do to be even better at preparing couples for marriage? The group met for several months, and then we had a follow-up meeting. And what the group said was there were two things that they found to be incredibly important. The first one is they wanted engaged couples to meet and to get to know married couples. They didn't want it to be a classroom situation, as good as that can be. And we've had some incredible speakers in this area talking about marriage, and I want to thank their hard work and dedication. But the study group wanted to go in a slightly different direction. They believed that if couples, engaged couples, could meet with different mentor couples at different stages in their marriage, they would be able to connect with them personally. They wanted to make sure that we had mentor couples who were newly married, mentor couples who had been married with children who were in grade school, high school age, and mentor couples who had been married for many years. The second thing that the study group recommended was that we place a high priority on the research that the Gallup Institute says about religious organizations. Many of us are familiar with the political polls from Gallup, but Gallup has an entire division dedicated to researching religious institutions. And they look across denominations. And whether it's Catholic or Protestant or Jewish, one of the things that they've said is of critical importance is belonging precedes believing. That if a person feels like they belong to a community of faith, they will more easily believe what that community believes. And Gallup places a high priority on that belonging. The study group said that if these couples could meet and connect with mentor couples, we would be able to both help them prepare for marriage and help them integrate deeper into the parish community. Based on that meeting, we entered the second phase of the study group. And for the next several months, and in fact, the entire process took almost 2 years, we developed a marriage preparation program for this parish that is very unique. Our engaged couples, over the process of their marriage preparation, meet with at least 6 different mentor couples, one-on-one, oftentimes in their home. And the conversations and the catechesis are rich and powerful. About 2/3 of the way through the marriage preparation process, I meet with each engaged couple. I do a sort of exit interview with them. I ask them their impression of the process. I ask them what they learned. I always ask them, what can we do better to help you prepare for marriage? And the conversations are oftentimes very similar. They will say things like, I wasn't really excited at the beginning because it's a bit more than my cousin at whatever parish had to do. But as we did it, it was worth it. The couples oftentimes find that they learn more about each other, but even more so about their Catholic faith. And almost universally, each couple that has gone through this marriage preparation process has deepened their faith and their commitment to practicing their faith. I want to pause for just a moment, and I want to thank all of the mentor couples who are involved. It's hard work. It takes time out of family life, but it's making a huge difference. Our marriage preparation program in this parish is not easy. In fact, it involves more of a commitment than any other parish in the area. In fact, any other parish I've ever heard of. It takes a lot of marriage prep couples in the parish to make it work, and it takes a commitment of the engaged couples to stay faithful to it. But it is working. Over the last 5 years, we have averaged between 25 and 35 engaged couples at any given time in the process. And these couples have rediscovered their faith. And by and large, these couples have found great joy in discovering what they thought they knew about the faith, but didn't know the depth of what we believe as Catholics. All of this together, though, is called proximate preparation for the sacrament. Proximate, meaning close. It is only one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is what's called remote preparation. The 6 to 8 months, 12 months that an engaged couple is involved in marriage prep in a parish is the proximate preparation, but it can't do everything. Remote preparation for the sacrament is of critical importance. And where does that take place? The church has taught in Pope St. John Paul II, it was very clear about this in so many of his writings, that parents are the primary catechists for their children. And the family is the first school of prayer. John Paul II called the family the domestic church. It's what happens in family life that's remote preparation for the sacrament. Strong and healthy marriages, strong and vibrant family life is the most important thing that can happen for marriage prep. Understanding what happens in our families is what will happen in the next generation. If we want strong and vibrant families in the future, then we must have them now. Children need to see what a strong marriage looks like, to live in a stable and strong and vibrant family life. Now, we know that no family is perfect and many of them struggle. But that's where our parish community comes in. That children need to see it not just in their own family, but other families too. That our responsibility as a parish is to work together to build up the kingdom, to work together to give witness to the power of the sacrament of marriage. Jesus has strong words about divorce, but the question needs to be asked, how can we prevent it to start with? Our prevention plan is helping people to understand what it means to discern marriage well, to approach it not just as a fulfillment of an emotion, but a true vocation, that God calls people to the sacrament of marriage. It isn't just something that you fall into because you happen to find somebody you like. Feelings come and go. Emotions come and go. But the vocation that God calls us to is a vocation that is aided by grace and rooted in real love. The remote preparation for the sacrament of marriage is what happens at home with the family. It's what happens in the community of faith. It's what happens amongst gathered families. This parish has a strong proximate preparation for marriage. But that is less than half of the equation. It is all of us together giving witness to God's love, living as disciples of the Lord, and showing what healthy, strong, and holy married life looks like. Finally, I'll say this. I've been a priest for about 17 years. In that time, I've actually seen some cultural shifts. It's hard to believe. I didn't think that it would really happen so much. 17 years doesn't seem like a lot. But when I was first ordained, one of the things that I would notice in marriage preparation meetings was that oftentimes people were kind of embarrassed or awkward conversations about cohabitation. There was some anxiety about telling the priest you're living together before marriage. But at some point there was a shift in that. And it shifted from this sense of embarrassment or anxiety to just an openness of talking about it, as assuming that it's the cultural norm, which I suppose it is. And not any sense of questioning whether or not one should do it. Which is interesting because cohabitation before marriage is the number one predictor of a marriage failing. Nobody seems to have any shame or second guessing that today. But there's good news too. There's good news because something else shifted at the same time. The other thing that shifted is even though marriage is something that we think of as being kind of this normal flow of stuff, to actually be married in the church today is in itself almost a countercultural statement. And while many couples that I meet with are surprised to learn that cohabitation is the number one predictor of a failed marriage, they are at the same time more excited about trying to do it right, more interested in knowing about what their faith is, more interested in trying to live the Catholic faith. So while we may look at the problems in our society, and they are there and they are real, there is also a growing desire to change, to grow in holiness, to pursue sanctity. And for that, we need to give thanks. Because how we live our lives today, the fidelity that we have to our God-given vocations today, is what will help the next generation live to be saints too.